Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we interview people who have built companies, sold companies, taken companies public, raised funds, and are making a significant impact in the world today. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host for today. Our next outstanding entrepreneur, Scott Hughes, is an incredibly smart and talented founder of a company called Sanoderm Medical. It's a global leader in wound care, healing, and premium tattoo aftercare products, which allows for customers faster wound healing, vibrant colors, and reduced scabbing. Scott has recently founded a foreign currency trading opportunity using algorithms and manual trades called RushVP. We're happy to have you on the Founders Odyssey today, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you a little bit better as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's fantastic to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So share with me a little bit about what your perspective is on the actual term of entrepreneurship. What does that mean to you?
So entrepreneurship is all about being, creating opportunities, creating your own destiny. It's controlling, you know, where you're at, what you do, how you spend your time. And that is really the goal for me. You know, growing up, I was always wanting to be a dentist. I was studying, you know, in college, I was pre-dental, taking all those classes and thinking that's what I wanted to do. Luckily, I didn't get into dental school. I tried working, you know, a regular 9-to-5 job and found out that there's really no control there. You know, you have your time set, you have what your time is worth set, and there's a limit. And, you know, for a lot of people, that's fine. And nothing wrong with that. For me, that didn't work. You know, I didn't feel like I had the freedom to do what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. I saw better opportunities in the processes that I was doing for the company that I worked for. And so that's when I really got the idea, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to have this control. I want to control my destiny, control my time, control, you know, how I contribute to the world. So that's when I really started just being like, you know what, I need to learn how to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So first thing right off the bat, I'm like, you know what, I just need to start reading. So I started getting books on Amazon and just reading, you know, how to form an LLC, you know, things about business taxes, things, just your classic books, Think and Grow Rich, you know, Napoleon Hill, Making Friends and Influencing People, just these books, and started getting really excited about it and really just wanted to push forward on an entrepreneurial path from there.
What age did this start?
So this was, you know, I wasn't super young. I mean, relatively speaking, I was about 29 years old.
Okay.
You know, I graduated college. I worked, you know, in the corporate world for about 7 years before I was like, you know what, I just can't keep doing this.
Yeah. Once you get the entrepreneurial bug, you really can't go back. I know when I first made, you know, a sale by myself and then had money, you know, it with a check, right? Somebody paid me for what I did, and it was nobody else that was telling me what I couldn't or could do. It's an amazing experience. Can you remember that first time where you had your first customer and, you know, what led to that? And
yeah, so that's true. Like getting that first, like, arm's length deal when it's someone besides your mom or your friend buying your products, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
So for me, it all started, you know, I wanted to be an entrepreneur, wanted to start down that path, had no idea, you know, what I was going to do, but I had read, you know, Napoleon Hill book and the concept of a mastermind. So I started meeting with my friends, you know, once a week, some of my coworkers and some high school friends. We would discuss new business ideas every single week. Like, all right, which one of these makes sense? What can you do with these different ideas? And out of that came the idea of selling bandages into the tattoo industry to heal new tattoos. Now, you know, at the time I had no tattoos. I'd never even been in a tattoo shop before, honestly. But I'm like, I thought this is a really cool idea. I got in my Excel spreadsheets and started mapping out like how many people are getting tattoos, how much I could sell the products for, and got super excited. Like, this is a real opportunity. I want to try this, right? And right at that same time, a mentor of mine, or at the time he was someone I just looked up to, very successful entrepreneur, very successful venture capitalist. I grew up just as a backyard neighbor of him. And I reached out to him. I said, hey, like, I'm really wanting to do the entrepreneur thing. Do you have any tips or ideas or suggestions for me? He's like, well, actually, I'm doing a entrepreneur training starting in like next week. I do this every year for entrepreneurs. So why don't you just come to that? So I was like, sweet. So I went to this training with him, and it went on for several weeks. It was once a week, and partway into it, he decided to make it a competition, like apprentice style, you know, where we had different tasks and different things we had to do, but there was also learning and different speakers that came in. And one of the key things that I learned, you know, in that whole process about selling had to do with, you know, sell first. You know, so many people get caught up in, oh, I need to design something amazing. I need to build something amazing. I need to have an awesome website, and then I can start selling, right? So this idea of sell first really hit me, and I'm like, that's what I need to do. Like, I don't want to waste any time building a website, doing any of these other things until I know that this idea of selling these bandages is a good one. So I found a manufacturer that could manufacture the bandages the way I wanted, had them just make me one box of samples. I had no packaging. I had no logo. I had no website. I hadn't spent any money on anything else except for this one box of samples, right? And I put those samples in a Walmart bag, you know, just a regular grocery bag, and walked into a tattoo shop for my first time ever and convinced them that this guy with no tattoos had a really great way of healing their tattoos. Now, I didn't tell them I didn't have any tattoos. I made sure to wear long pants and long sleeves, and they couldn't see it. But I had this background from, you know, all the pre-dental classes where I could talk intelligently about physiology, about the skin, about wound healing, and convince them just to try the product, right? And they tried it, came back a week later, they loved it, and they bought the product. And I was like, this is fantastic. I've got a real, real opportunity here. So I went through all those samples, started selling them. Once I'd gone through all those, that first batch of samples that I got, I'm like, okay, it's time to design a logo. It's time to build a website. So I had literally been selling my product from about July of 2011 up until April of 2011, before I even built a website, right? I did finally get a name. I did design a logo in that process, but it wasn't until March or April when I had a website. And I had kind of exhausted the Utah territory and decided, okay, it's time to expand out. So I built the website, started making phone calls. And I remember the very first sale I got, it was like April 11th of 2012. Somebody came to my website, bought my product. And that is a fantastic thing. Like you said, when someone that I didn't even know came to my website, paid full price for my product, didn't have to give them any discounts, you know, and it's really an exciting feeling.
Yeah, let's walk through that process of, well, first, I like what you said about just getting started. I think too many people, they stop themselves from actually being successful based on just getting started and thinking that they have to have everything already lined up, right?
Exactly.
And I think that you are a perfect testament of just getting started, solving a problem, but also knowing your product, you know, in and out. And I think, you know, for all those founders out there, you must be solving a problem. You must know your product very, very well. And then you must have the courage to just go out and step out, you know, and create what you like for your future, right? So share with us a little bit about creating your future and stepping out, being courageous.
So honestly, walking into that first tattoo shop took a ton of courage. You know, I've never been a super social outgoing guy, you know, and for me to walk into a tattoo shop where I've never even been in a tattoo shop it was really scary for me. You know, I had no idea how they were going to receive the product. I had no idea how they were going to receive me. And it's kind of a tricky situation. These guys are tattoo artists. They've been in the industry, you know, for years and years. I mean, healing their tattoos a certain way for years and years. And here's some guy walking in saying, here's a better way to heal your tattoos. I've got something new that's better than what you've been doing your entire lives, your entire careers, right? That was kind of scary, honestly. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to walk in. I know this product is superior. I know that these bandages that are used in hospitals, you know, in clinical settings, in to heal surgeries, abrasions, wounds. And I know they're going to work on tattoos. They're going to heal these tattoos so much better, so much cleaner, and so much, you know, in a safer way than what they were using back then. You know, back then they were using Saran wrap and masking tape.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people still do, unfortunately. But when I walked in and had that courage just to try and be like, here's a product. It is superior. Your tattoos are going to heal better. Your clients are going to thank you, you know, and it worked. Luckily, that was just a good timing, a good product, and people bought in.
Yeah. So share with us that kind of the maturation of the company, right? So you went from yourself to, did you have some other people that you started to recruit as a part of a team to help, or share with us the maturation of the company and then how you personally matured through that process, you know, as a business owner and leader?
Okay, absolutely. So like I said, I started the company in 2011. I was actually still working 9 to 5 in my corporate job. And so I could only really go door to door and deliver the products in the evenings, which is what I did. Once we started selling online, I was married at the time, and my wife, she would ship out the product. As soon as the orders came in, we would hurry, or she would hurry and pack those up and ship those out. So I actually had this as a side hustle for the first 3 years, where I was, you know, making my phone calls at night, you know, doing my deliveries, you know, here locally at night. But the cool thing was, in my industry, the tattoo industry, I could get home from work at 6 p.m. and I could call tattoo shops until 10 p.m. Hmm. Right? They didn't care. They're still open.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And a lot of times when I would call them and I'd talk to them, they'd be like, hey, thanks for calling. You're actually like the first solicitor to ever call us. You know, because the tattoo industry was so overlooked. The tattoo industry is really, really new. When you don't, people don't realize that it wasn't even legal to tattoo in the United States in all 50 states until 2006, right? And I started my company here in 2011. So it was right on that initial wave of the tattoo industry really kind of growing. And they were hungry for new ideas, new innovations. And these bandages that I brought were perfect for that. So I built the company as a side hustle for 3 years, just working in the evenings. Eventually, it took more than just evenings, which unfortunately or fortunately led to me getting fired from my corporate job because I ended up having to work my Sanitrum job on company time. My boss found out, and that was it. But when that happened, I wasn't even fully ready to be all in, right? I wasn't making enough money to support me and my family and my business. But I thought, you know what? If I put a full-time effort in this, it's going to work. And I did. And when I started working full-time, the business tripled that year. And I worked it just myself for that first year. After that, the number of orders were growing and I couldn't handle running the company and the orders. So our first hire was just a neighborhood kid to come into our basement where we had all of our inventory and to package orders.
Share with us a little bit about the all-in and how you started to structure with organization your schedule, because now, you know, you could be on or you could be off, right? So share with us a little bit of how you structured your day to be successful. And yeah.
Okay. So the tattoo industry is unique. Tattoo shops, you know, are often closed on Mondays. They don't open till noon or one, and then they work late. So I can use the morning hours to prepare, you know, marketing material, to study SEO, because I did everything myself, you know, and with my wife at the time. And we, you know, would prepare marketing material, emails, you know, create our ads. And it was a lot of work, a lot of fun, but the timing was perfect. Mornings could be spent doing that. And in the afternoons, I could get on the phones, start making phone calls, you know, just cold calls. And I'd just get a list and go through Google, you know, Google tattoo shops in Albuquerque and just go down the list, start calling, and then just keeping track of them in Excel spreadsheets. And that's how we grew the company.
You know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs could really do the same thing. I mean, we have so much information out there right now as far as contacts and, you know, segmentation.
And really, when I look back at it, you know, and looking at other people who start businesses, you know, I never raised money. Like some people are like, oh, I got to go raise money. I got to build a website. I got to do this. I got to do that. I didn't take that path. I just sold, go out and sell, then design, then build. You know, you need to validate your idea. You need to get money coming in, and then you can build, then you can expand. And using that model, I never had to raise money. We didn't take on any debt for the first like 5 years, right? Everything was grassroots. Everything was cash. Everything was self-funded because we were able to grow and just this grassroots method.
I think more entrepreneurs need to hear that. The grassroots method. And I think it's almost a cop-out to have to raise funds, you know, before you really find a product market fit.
Yeah. So many people are like, oh, I don't have the money to start my own business. Oh, I don't have the time to start my own business. Yeah, I was working 9 to 5, right? I had a full-time job and I started this as a side hustle. Yeah. And I didn't necessarily put in 40 hours a week at first. You know, I was putting in, you know, 6 until 10 PM in those evenings. And that's it. It took a little time to really get going. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we were also changing the behavior of an entire industry. Right, we had to educate, like, this is how these bandages work. This is how tattoos need to heal. This is the physiology of your skin. This is why it works. And so we had to really craft a message to educate people. And, you know, even doing that, we still were doubling in growth every single year, at least doubling.
So you went from the basement. It was just you. Mm-hmm. Then your wife helped you. Mm-hmm. And now we're stepping into doubling every year.
Right.
So let's walk through that. Once again, maturation of the company. Did you end up getting a warehouse, a 3PL?
Yeah. So once the basement wasn't big enough, and all my neighbors were so fed up with the semi-truck blocking the road for half the day while we unloaded the semi-truck by hand because we didn't have forklifts or anything like that. And we would literally just call up all the neighbor kids like, hey, come here. We'll pay you $15 an hour to come help unload this truck. And we would just take the boxes out. I had a hole cut in my garage into my basement. And then we put a ramp, just like a giant board.
Yes.
We'd put the boxes on there and it would slide down into the basement. And then somebody in the basement would go and organize the boxes in there. And we'd fill the entire basement. We just had paths, you know, between the boxes.
Do you have any pictures of this? I'd love to see.
We do have some pictures. I don't know if I could find them. I know we took pictures. And so there was a point when we were like, you know what? We can't fit this in the basement. I'd really like to have access to my ping pong table again.
Yes.
So let's get a warehouse. So we did. We moved into a warehouse just not too far from where we're at right now, over here on 90th South.
Utah, for those that are outside of the city.
Right here in Utah, in Sandy City, Utah. And we actually moved into some office space we just shared right there in the same building. And we fulfilled out of that building for about a year before we got a 3PL that took over all of our shipping once it got just too much for us to handle.
Yeah. So as we build a business, I mean, there's a few different areas of adversity that you'll face. Can you share with me, you know, maybe one that can resonate with you and then also how you kind of overcome that? For those out there that are listening, I'm sure everybody goes through different challenges, right? Whether it be employees, you know, manufacturing, supply chain, mm-hmm. payroll, embezzlement, not to say that happened, but, no. You know, what did you guys experience?
So one of the hardest things for me, so we hired our first employee in 2015 just to handle the shipping, you know. Just come in, package your orders, ship them out. You know, that employee's responsibilities grew. She was just 16 years old, but they grew and she got better and better and doing other things. And one of the hardest things for me was to hire other people and start delegating. Like I had done everything for the company, you know, for 4 years before I really started hiring people. And as I started hiring people out, there's a couple things I noticed. I started like feeling a little helpless. Right. And there was definitely some just feelings of being lost. Like, okay, if they're doing that task now, what else do I do? Mm. Right. And so that was really hard for me to kind of let go. But ultimately I realized, you know, these people I'm hiring, they're better at that specific task than me. And that was a fantastic realization that, you know, I can hire people who are smarter than me, who are better than me at these different tasks. You know, people who have had experience doing this stuff. Like I was doing, you know, like my own SEO research and own, you know, marketing material. And once I started hiring people who really knew that stuff, it was great to see what they could do. And I'm very pleased to say that, you know, all of my employees were better at me at their specific tasks than I was before. I would still guide and direct and, you know, make my suggestions, but ultimately they knew what they were doing and trusting in them was really beneficial. And luckily I didn't hire really good people. We had always had a great team.
So as far as the systematic approach to the development of systems within the company, what did you do to create those systems? Because I know it's so important. Was it, you know, task out the specifics that you want for that individual? You know, because a lot of people, you know, your employees are only as good as the instructions that you give them, mm-hmm. right? And then whenever I'm consulting with companies, I always see an infraction in essence with the documentation process. So how did you guys start to document and share that with others?
So we just hired, you know, for specific pieces. We would get, you know, have people start, you know, part-time. Mm. They would come in and we would hire a sales rep and just show them, here's the script that I've been using, you know, take that, modify it to fit yourself. You know, here's the way I've been calling people, the times I've been calling people, how I've been tracking it, and just kind of you'd pass that information on. But, okay. But ultimately, you know, they would have their own ideas. They had experience in sales, you know, more so than I had even in different arenas. They could apply their own information, their own twists on what was being done and their own talents. And, you know, just doing that, you know, we were able to expand, diversify, and really grow. And luckily, like I said, we found really great people who could do more than one thing. Like in a startup, mm-hmm. people have to wear a lot of hats, right? And people can't necessarily just wear one hat because there's just too much to do and not enough people. And so, you know, we overcame that by just really having good communication and making sure we were all knew what needed to be done and getting those tasks.
I like what you said earlier today on this. It was really about letting go but also being there, you know, kind of having a little bit of oversight, but not to the point where the individuals as a part of your company are feeling micromanaged, you know. And that's really transformational leadership truly cares about, you know, the five core key components on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? As opposed to only the three that transactional leadership looks at. And you're empowering the employees, you know, as partners in essence to build this with you together. And I believe that's so important. So, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, like one of the things I hated about corporate America was being told exactly how I had to do everything. Like there was a very defined set process of things that needed to be done. And to me, they didn't make sense. And I did not want to impose that on my employees. I wanted to make them have ownership, have skin in the game, have their own ideas in the game. And, you know, that way we've got better ideas by combining multiple people's skills and talents and ideas.
That's very wise of you, you know, to start maturing in that way. Share with us now you are starting, I mean, you've really grown now. You've got warehouse people that are working for you. You've got your whole, you know, manufacturers on speed dial in essence. So, and you said you had to take on a little debt, but that was probably just growth capital at that time to just really expedite the entire process.
Yeah, so the first debt we took on was to help with inventory. Because like I said, we were doubling or more every single year. So our biggest challenge in the beginning was keeping up with demand and keeping our product in stock, right? So the first time we ever got a loan was the, you know, $50,000 SBA loan to help get a little extra inventory so we could get ahead of that curve.
Yeah.
You know,
plus it probably helps with your little margins too, you know, if you order in bulk.
Yes, we would order in bulk, but you know, we were ordering from China. Our run times were incredibly long. And so we really needed to get ahead of that, get all the product here that we could, so we could really grow. Cause we were running out of products all the time. We could not keep them in stock. So that was what our first loans were for, getting ahead of that inventory.
That's good. Yeah. So bring us to the point where you're, where you are now with the company. I know just recently that you have, and you'll, you can explain this too, but stepped down, but yet you're still part of the board, and the company is in great hands. So share with us a little bit about the process to really getting to where it is today, because it's a global leader, correct?
Yeah. So we have sales in over 100 countries. We've had, we keep track of our website. I don't know where the number's at exactly, but we can keep track of how many customers we've had, and it's around 7 million customers or tattoos healed at this point, based on our estimations of the products we've sold. So, you know, going back, you know, we started hiring, we ended up getting more and more employees, taking over more and more tasks. 5 years ago, I ended up hiring a CEO to replace myself. I assumed the role of president of the company and just was overseeing, and I was managing new products. We were, you know, our bread and butter, our primary product is the Sanoderm bandage. There's a great opportunity in all of the tattoo industry to have other products that go along with the bandages to improve healing. So we added lotions, we added balms, we've added soaps, and they're fantastic products. We grew that way. And with our new CEO at the helm for the last 5 years, things have continued to grow. We've had our struggles. You know, COVID was a struggle. You know, the tattoo industry was closed for months. We were able to withstand that. We've had our share of manufacturing and shipping issues. We've gotten through those. But yeah, this year, in the past just like 5 weeks, I stepped down and officially, you know, in quotes, retired. Mm-hmm. Still an owner of the company, still involved in at the board level, but no longer at an operational level.
Are you at liberty to explain a little bit of the, was it a stock purchase buyout from the company to you, or whatever you're comfortable with explaining here as to how that was structured? Because some, you know, some entrepreneurs out there are seasoned and they're listening to this under, you know, wanting to either exit their company or currently replace or do something like that. So can you explain?
Yeah. So my retirement was simply me just stepping down from my operational role. I didn't take a buyout. I didn't take anything. I still have my same ownership in the company, still have my same, you know, member board position in the company. But I did step down because I, you know, the company's in good hands. You know, I had, you know, managed it from a president level for the last 5 years. I'm seeing things going in a really good direction, you know, starting this year. So I was able to step out of that operational role. And last year I had started another company, and that company is doing really well, and decided, you know what, Sanoderm's in good hands. This other company's got some great potential. I'm going to go focus on this. Well, I still have my eyes on Sanoderm, still, yeah, you know, involved in knowing what's going on. I'm going to really go focus on this other opportunity now.
That's good. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the future now and what you're excited about building and what this next opportunity is and how did it present itself to you. So share with me a little bit about the next opportunity you're excited about.
So then my new opportunity is called Rush Venture Partners. And I did start that company last February, so just over a year ago. And the whole idea, you know, came from, you know, as I had a little extra time, you know, as president of the company, you know, I still had an operational role, but I did have some free time where I could start studying and other things. Same thing I did when I had my corporate job. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to find something else to do. And I read all these books. Well, same thing in this situation. You know, I had some extra time, started watching videos, started studying. My idea was to really learn how to invest. I had never learned how to invest, how to, you know, manage my money. And so I had been spending a lot of time learning about trading, different investment opportunities, and decided I'm going to give this a shot. So I had started trading foreign currencies and programming and using algorithms to do that those trades. And it was going really well. So that's when I decided I'm going to start another company now around this foreign currency trading. And that was the genesis of Rush Venture Partners.
Do you have any education that you are planning to either create for that company to be able to help people understand what you now know? And
yeah, so there's a lot of opportunities.
Product roadmap. Home.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities around the foreign currency. Right now, what we're doing is we're doing the trading. Mm-hmm. And for people who qualify, they can, you know, create their own accounts, and we offer a copy trading type service where their accounts will copy the trades that are happening in my account or in the company's account.
Can you explain a little bit more in detail on foreign exchange and how the company makes its money, or those that are part of the opportunity can make money themselves?
Yeah, so foreign currency, you know, the Forex, as it's called, market is, it is a ginormous market. It's 30 times larger than the U.S. stock market. There's so much money that is changed between banks, between people, between countries every single day. And the value of each different country's currency is changing all day long by thousands or hundreds of a cent is all it really takes. And so using leverage, we're able to spot those changes, and well, me or our algorithm will spot, you know, opportunities to see where those price changes are going to happen and buy those different currencies and take advantage of those fluctuating prices.
Will the software automatically sell for you?
Yes, the software automatically buys and sells.
That's incredible.
So the software is incredibly effective. We've had fantastic returns, and it's been very exciting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I would, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for diversification of a portfolio, you know, and the purpose of having Scott here on the podcast is, in essence, to get to learn about him a little bit better and then also have him educate you on, you know, what he is seeing as an entrepreneur within the opportunities that they're starting to really look at right now. Can you explain a little bit about the, you know, current forecast of, you know, the business that you guys have now started, and then also maybe the future as well, because we have some interesting things happening within just currencies in general. So can you maybe share a little insight as to the future of currency?
You know, it's hard to say exactly where currency will go. I mean, it's changing every single day. And we're just trying to take advantage of just little micro changes up and down. We only trade the most stable currencies in the world.
Okay.
We're not trying to, you know, take these massive swings by these more volatile currencies. You know, and for the most part, currencies will stay almost horizontal. They'll go up a little bit, they'll go down a little bit, but it's always kind of a pretty steady thing in the grand scheme of things. So we just take advantage of those little micro changes. And we try to avoid, if there's going to be big news about the Japanese yen, then that's when we'll be like, okay, we're going to turn the algorithm off.
Just not play.
Just not even play. Because the algorithm is built to handle the everyday ups and downs. It's not built to handle, oh, there's a news event happening. That's where I come in for the manual trading. But we'll turn the bot off, the algorithm off for those events.
Interesting. Yeah, well, you know, obviously you're saying that you're having some success there. Can you share kind of a vision? Is it a vision for an actual company, or is it just something that you guys are currently, it sounds like it's something you're currently doing, of course, increasing your overall knowledge and then just sharing it with others because you're having so much success.
So our real goal, so it's Rush Venture Partners, but we call the trading account Elios. Elios is the goddess of human kindness, of philanthropy, of brotherly love, right? So our goal is to increase our customers or investors' ability to give back.
Okay.
So, you know, with Sanoderm, the goal was to, you know, to build a company and have people heal their tattoos better, be more comfortable expressing themselves, you know, through that, the healing process of the tattoos or any of those other body modifications. And now I really feel like I want to just give back and increase other people's ability to give back. So we have this opportunity where people can grow their money at a rate that's really exciting and give back. So we have, you know, our pool of investors or customers that we communicate with on a regular basis. We have calls with them, you know, monthly. And the idea is to bring in and introduce different charities to our investors and help them find, you know, good opportunities to really give back and improve the world.
I love that.
So I mean, yeah, so
Elios, creating your own microeconomy of success, but also being able to do the Tom's model, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Helping out the community. Huh.
So yeah, we encourage our customers, our investors, our account holders, whatever you want to call them, to give back. And not just anybody can join or become an investor. We, you know, we try to vet everybody and make sure they're people that are those kind of people.
Yeah. And kind of good for culture too, because if you're having these team meetings, it's really important for everyone to really buy into the, you know, the future of Elios, like you're saying, and being able to give back. And it's a noble cause. And I'm looking forward to seeing some of the ways that you guys, you and your partner, Philip, are able to really help, you know, different communities worldwide.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today on the Founders Odyssey podcast and just, you know, sharing with us your past, your present, and the future and what you're excited about. I personally, once again, am excited for you. So how do people get a hold of you, or how can they follow you?
You can definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn, on Instagram. I would love to connect and give back in any way I can, give any advice or suggestions to people. You know, I got a lot of help and advice when I started. Like, we're here in the Larry Miller campus on the community college here in Salt Lake. And I was just telling you before we started, like, I spent a lot of time here working with the Small Business Development Center. I remember my first counselor here, I don't know what they're called, counselors or coaches. But yeah, this was 12 years ago. Mark Smolensky was his name. He's the guy who taught me how to import products from China, right? And that was huge.
Basically started your entire business.
So he gave me that idea. Because at first we were looking at, you know, using, you know, a U.S. manufacturer, a manufacturer or a company that was already making those bandages for the hospitals, but ended up being way too expensive. The tattoo industry was not going to be able to afford hospital-like prices for these bandages. And that's when I'm like, well, what if I go to China?
They can manufacture the same thing.
The patents on these bandages expired because they've been used in hospitals for over 20 years. Patents are only good for 20 years. So that's when I was able to go and find a new manufacturer that would make the same product in China for a fraction of the cost and then import. So yeah.
You know, I bet you started a whole Chinese market over there too. Shoot.
So yeah, we started that, and you know, 12 years ago, and now there are dozens of Chinese knockoffs on Amazon all over the world. So we really changed the way tattoos are healed, created a whole new, you know, industry of tattoo aftercare, really.
Yeah.
And it's both exciting and frustrating to see the competition we created.
Yeah.
You know, but
well, you know, first the top, you know, that's pretty much what it is. Well,
yeah, we're the verb. People got to stand under their tattoos.
Perfect. Well, thank you once again. And guys, if you like today's episode, feel free to share with your friends and also subscribe to the show. We'll talk to you again soon.